Blog Talk Radio.
Booker T. Washington Speaks. We're welcoming everyone to Booker T. Washington Speaks on this Saturday, October 14th. And my name is Halim, the Dream Builder, Doctor of Self-Esteem. And I am acting as a co-host of this show, which is hosted by our host and moderator, the great-grandson of Dr. Booker T. Washington, is Marshall, Professor Marshall Cadmus Washington Abui, and all those names is his historic record of names. So it's a long string of names, and he's a man that actually his family is the legacy. So in any event, we are having this very good show this evening, and we are hoping that everyone will join us and kick off your shoes and you know, relax and enjoy. And if you drink anything, we ask you that you be sober this evening, at least, for this conversation. So we ask that we just kind of have some hot chocolate, some water, or some you know, something that's not going to make you intoxicated, because we have to be very conscious and cognitive of the very serious things we'll be discussing. So tonight's topic will be, is it unpatriotic to kneel during the playing or singing of the national anthem? But before we continue with my comments, I want to invite you to join me in prayer as we have this. So please say it in Arabic and English. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahir rabbil alamin. Ar-Rahman Nirrahim, Maliki Yawmiddin, Iyyaka Na'budu wa Iyyaka Nasta'in, Ihdina Siratal Mustaqim, Siratal Ladzina An'amta 'Alayhim, Ghayril Maghdubi 'Alayhim, Waladdallin. Amen. And I repeat what I said in English in the translation of the Arabic, which I recited from my heart. We seek refuge with God away from the accursed devil, Satan. With the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, praise be to God, cherisher and sustainer of the worlds, most gracious, most merciful, master of the day of judgment. Thee alone do we worship, and thy aid do we seek. Show us the straight way, the way of those whom thou hast bestowed thy grace, and who go not against thy purpose to avoid the wrath from being non-responsive to your holy work that you did, that you've actually put in place for us under divine laws. Amen. Again, my name is Halim Mustafa, but I'm your host as Halim the Dream Builder, Dr. Self-Esteem, assisting a Professor Marshall Cavendish Washington, who is a senior great-grandson of Dr. Booker T. Washington, founder of the historic Tuskegee University in the state of Alabama. Now, I mentioned that the tonight's topic is it unpatriotic to kneel during the playing or singing of the national anthem? And we just played that anthem, and it's been really good to me. I was going to say something, but I'll wait till things go. So we're going to hope to have a live discussion tonight. So, so please join in if you will. And without further ado, here is the professor. Sir, this is passed to you, but I'll assume it until...
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, well, welcome everyone to another weekly episode of Washington Speaks, Booker T. Washington Speaks. And our topic tonight, I'll reiterate it. We've kind of expanded it a little bit since I published it earlier. But the topic tonight is it unpatriotic to kneel under any circumstances as an American citizen during the playing of the national anthem or the singing of the national anthem? So think about that. As American citizens, we have rights. And one of the things that I'm going to mention is the right that's given to us in the Bill of Rights of our Constitution of the United States in the First Amendment. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging means limiting, the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peacefully or peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress, meaning a proposal to deal with the grievances that people may have. The Congress will make no law basically muzzling people in any way that want to express their grievances against the government of the United States. So going back to the topic, is it unpatriotic for American citizens who want to make a protest of the grievances pertaining to racial oppression in particular to kneel during the playing or singing of the national anthem? Now, we're going to get into that in just a minute, but what I want to do at this time is to, as the music plays in the background, and I hope you'll be able to hear the music, I want to play for you a piece that's very famous in the African-American community. The name of the song is Lift Every Voice and Sing, and most of us have heard it many times in our lifetimes, but I want to go ahead and let the music play as I recite the poem. I'm not going to sing it. Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, the whip, felt in the days when hope unborn had died. Yet with a steady beat, have not our weary feet come to the place for which our fathers sighed. We have come over a way that with tears has been watered. We have come treading our path through the blood of the slaughtered black folks. Out of the gloomy past, now, till now, we stand at last where the white gleam of our bright star is cast. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who has brought us thus far on the way, thou who hast by thy might led us into the light, keep us forever in the path, we pray, the path of freedom, of justice, and of equality. Lest our feet stray from the places, our God, where we met thee. Lest our hearts drunk with the wine of the world, we forget thee. Shadowed beneath thy hand, may we forever stand true to our God, true to our native land, Mother Africa, and the United States of America. So we wanted to leave you with that thought as we proceed through tonight's conversation as a preamble to where we're going to be headed. As African-American people, for over 400 years, we hoped that in this great country that we, through our sweat, blood, and tears, helped to build up when others did not want to work, to farm the lands, to produce the food, to build the beautiful homes and mansions of the wealthy class of people, to build the railroads and to do all of the hard, dirty labor that the other people were not willing to do. Not even our brothers, American Indians, were willing to labor under the lash for 300 years almost in the hot plantations of the South. But we did it. But all this time, we hoped that one day we would realize freedom in this country, to be treated like human beings instead of three-fifths of a human being, or even worse, as animals. And now in 2017, we see the tide turning back against all of our dreams and all of our hopes and all of our aspirations and all the things we thought we had gained through our peaceful protests in the 1960s, when acting dogs were sick on our little children and fire hoses were sprayed on us to knock us down and put us unconscious, and we were beat like we were nothing but dummies. And yet we kept on believing. And now we see our boys and even our girls being shot down in the streets by policemen that have no sympathy for them. Unarmed people being shot down in cold blood. And we are wondering what happened to the dream. And so we had this thing during the civil rights movement, we said we shall overcome, and yet it looks like we're being overcome. Some of it's our own fault, some of it's not. But now we have these young men, and even it's going down to the level of the school children, that they want to call attention to the injustices that are being done. Some of it we're doing to ourselves, I will admit, but that's because of ignorance. But a lot of it's being because some people just don't like the idea of these black and brown and dark-skinned people getting equality in this great land of opportunity. So they're trying still to push us backwards, 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 and even putting us in slavery and chain gangs on convict labor plantations. And so these hopes that we expressed through the song that I read, through the music that you heard, these young men that are football players and others have decided to bring their case to the court of world opinion, not because they don't love America, but because they love freedom, justice, and equality more, and they want other people to respect that. So here we're going to go ahead, and we have a number of people that have called in, a few that are ready to speak, and we're going to go ahead and what we're going to do is everybody's mic is going to be open unless we hear some background noise, and we'll try to find out who it is by selectively closing out the mics until we can get the background noise out. But to begin with, we're going to open up everybody's mic, and we're going to invite everybody to speak as your spirit moves you. So we're not going to call on you. We used to do that, but we began to realize that some people just don't want to be called on because they just want to listen. So on the first come, first serve basis, you can go ahead. We're going to begin, though, to break the ice, so to speak, to ask our co-host to speak. And then after he finishes, the next person that wants to say something, you can go ahead and chime in. And if somebody starts speaking, then we want everybody else to just wait until they're finished. And then first come, first serve. And then you can jump on as soon as the other person's finished. And we'll keep it rolling like that. So I'm going to repeat the topic. Is it unpatriotic under any circumstances for American citizens as a way of protesting grievances, as a way of expressing their dissatisfaction with racial oppression in particular, to kneel during the playing or the singing of the American national anthem? Okay, Brother Dr. Halim Mustafa, our co-host, we're going to invite you to come in first, and then we're going to let it move from there. So please go ahead.
Yes, I want to thank you, and good evening, everyone, again. That song is very inspiring. I almost wanted to drop a tear as I was hearing you say what you were expressing and knowing and reflecting on the struggles of black people here, whom I was not a part of the effort, but I certainly felt the pain of it. And, I mean, so paying the price, we've paid the price, and this country belongs to us, those of us who are human beings, and who have done things deserve the respect to be as citizens under the due rights of the Constitution to be able to stand and protest. Now, in terms of protesting, standing, praying, kneeling, whatever the gesture is, or turning your back, is still accepted under what is the constitutional right. Now, if we are losing that as a basis of what is the Constitution, then we don't have a country, we have a dictatorship, or something even worse. And I would hate to say, because the treatment of the people who built this country should definitely be first and foremost in the people's hearts and minds, unless of course they are extremely racist, extremely what you might say anti-melanin. And this is a psychological disposition, and I can't help but keep mentioning it because there's a tendency for people who don't have that to fear people who are from the hue of Africa. So with nothing more to say right now, I'll just kind of – that's my comments for now.
Okay, thank you, Brother Dr. Halim Mustafa. And I also want to let you all who are listening know that on Mondays – Tuesdays and Wednesdays at this same telephone number that you called in on. He has a very, very important show. He's directing his message on that show primarily to the young people, but really it's a universal message. I always get a lot every time I listen to him on his show on this Booker T. Washington Speaks channel. But his show is Life Success Radio with Dr. Halim Mustafa, the Dream Builder. So tune in to the same number at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and at 6 p.m. On Central Time and 4 p.m. Pacific Time to hear our co-host who has his own show on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. So we thank him for being our co-host. We really appreciate you, Brother Dr. Ali. And now we're going to move on. The mics are all open, so anyone that wants to speak, go ahead. And then if you hear somebody already speaking, the rest of us are going to keep quiet until they finish, and then we can chime in. So the mics are open. So if you'd like to comment on that topic or anything I said, anything that you heard, then please go ahead.
Yes, my name is Don Carter. It's the first time I ever heard this, but I'm interested already. There's an interesting topic of Booker T. Washington speech. And if you know what Booker T., I guess his famous one was at Atlanta Compromise. And he says, throw your bucket down where you stand. I believe that's the way it was. But anyway, just how you gonna stay where you at. Don't fight, don't fuss. Just be humble and work. So learn to toil with your hands and continue to do what we've always have done. But I guess it's nemesis. And I don't like using the word nemesis, but W.B. Du Bois was just the opposite. Not from the South, but educated from the North, first African-American, Harvard graduate, so forth, so on. You know, I'm not going to be thankful for you giving me something that you stole from me. So we've been, sort of sitting back. At each time we try to raise up, you know, we get, as you said earlier, sprayed or dog turned on us and so forth and so on. But whatever it takes, and by any means necessary, you know, these things need to change. We are the original God's people. And they even tried to steal the melanin from us. So it's not a privilege, but a latent pilferage. You know, I stole it, and you don't know it. So that's all I'm going to say right now. But I threw it out there because there's a parallelism in the Booker T. Washington speech and us kneeling or standing or bowing our heads, wherever it is, for the rights that we are supposed to have. We don't stand where we are. We move forward because time, that a variable passed to everything, moves forward. Now you hear me, now you don't.
Okay, everybody's mic is open. You can go ahead and you can respond to our brother that just spoke, or you can respond directly to the topic or something I said or read or something Brother Dr. Halim said, but you can go ahead. Whoever wants to be next, just go right ahead.
Professor, if no one's going to say something, I want to say something. I think it's very important that we understand being humble is not, or passive is not weakness, okay? And having forgiveness is not weakness. And what happens a lot of times, we can go and bite the bait and become violent in our thought process, and then we're inviting the negativity to join in our psyche, in our soul. So what I'm suggesting is that it's time for wisdom personified in dealing with this situation, right? And I know what that comes down to at some point is proactive economic independence. Now, I'm going to say that one more time, that we have to be proactive in economic independence if we're going to do anything. Anything else, or short of that, we just blow and smoke up our own rear ends. Because the only thing that the world, now I'm not just saying America, I'm talking about the world understands is economics. And we keep missing that one. We always going to everything else, And forget about going and doing no battle. Ain't no battle happening with black folks in the streets fighting no white folks. That ain't going to happen. Right? Because this country and the world is not ready for that and will never be ready for that. And I know that God is not going to bless people who be aggressive like that. Right? So we got to be wise. And we got to do the right thing. And the economic independence is the strategy that I suggest.
Good evening, okay, everybody. I want to say something. I feel like I just want to say what I got to say. I'm not a sports person, first of all, but I tend to agree with Dr. Frances Welty. She said that Caucasian men. Is somebody interrupting me?
Go ahead, baby.
Caucasian men are always watching black men's balls. Football, baseball, basketball, golf, tennis, soccer, whatever. Okay. How I'm looking at this, I'm not a sports person. I'm looking at it like this. It's something that started out as a quiet act of defiance against a protest about police brutality. I see it as an act of patriotism, personally. I'm analyzing it, dropping to one knee to mark the ongoing suffering of African-American people, disrespecting a flag to white supremacists is more important than bringing attention to black people being murdered daily by the KKK police department nationwide. Okay, this is how I see it. The football field has now become a forum for political debate. Some player said something about stay in the locker room if you don't want to stand for the answer, just stay in the locker room. So my protest doesn't mean anything. You want me to respect this flag? And you want me to respect this country while you continuously murder people? Politics and sports. Politics and sports. I think it has to do with the black man's penis. I might be a little insane tonight, but that's how I'm looking at it. The Masters, Augusta, Georgia, the Masters Tournament, the Masters of the Master Race, the little white ball, okay? You're always looking at black men's balls. Any way you look at it, it's all about black men's balls. I want all of the ball players to walk away. And then what's going to happen financially if they walk out right now? If they walk out right now, I wish they would walk out right now. High school students have more courage than these players are making all this money. The male genital, the symbolism, the neurotic conflict in the white man's psyche. It's formulated. What's his name? Kaepernick. His protest was perhaps, maybe it was influenced by outside. I don't think so. Disrespecting the flag in the country. No, you're disrespecting white male supremacy. It's a reflection on our nation, our race, faith, and everybody's views. You know, that's how I'm looking at it. White folks are still watching. White males are watching black men's genitals, their balls. And it's all about the ball game. It's the ball game. That's how I'm looking at it. And I'm not a sports person. I don't like sports. I'm not into sports like that. But I see this. So you can't even protest. You're just supposed to accept somebody continuously murdering you and your people and your children. And no, I don't care what you say. You're still watching black men's balls. Okay, that's all I got to say.
Anybody that wants to speak is free to respond to Baina or to say what you want to say. This is a free country. We still believe in freedom of speech. And the only rules that we made when we started this program about 8 months ago were two things. Number one, to respect the other person. Don't talk against the other person, even though you may disagree with what the other person is saying. Don't step on somebody when they're talking. Let them finish. And the second rule, which is just as important, is don't say anything that is treasonous or seditious. Because I personally believe in America. I love America. I served the American people as a member of the armed forces for 30 years and retired. And I am proud of the fact that I received one of the military's highest awards for duty when I retired, the Army and Marine Corps Navy Commendation, the Navy and Marine Corps Commendation Medal, along with many other personal awards for my service to this country. So I don't want anybody to say anything against America, but we do have the right to say what we need to say about what is wrong with America. And those are two different things, because we want to fix America. We've stood by America in every single war, from the Revolutionary War through the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean conflict, which I went to Korea shortly after the war was over, but they were still fighting over there. They were still bombing. They were still blowing up people. They nightly used to warn us in my unit that they were going to kill us. So I know what it's like to be in a war zone. And then Vietnam, I was in the military as a medic during Vietnam, although I didn't get deployed, but I was trained to be able to help in the medical field during Vietnam. And then during the Iraq War and Desert Storm, I was in Desert Storm. And I didn't retire until 2001, just before 9/11. And if I had been on duty at 9/11, I would have volunteered to go to wherever I had to go to try to put down the terrorism against the American people. So I'm very patriotic. And so I don't want to hear anybody say anything against our nation, because it's our nation, even though there's some really big cracks in this plate, but we're going to try to fix them. Martin Luther King, who was my personal friend, never lost faith in the ability of American people to fix this big crack of racism. And I believe it can be fixed eventually if people are serious about doing it. So you can come on the show and you can say what you want to. Just don't say anything that's treasonous or seditious. Seditious means trying to undermine the government. But let's go ahead and have a conversation. So anyone else wants to speak, go right ahead.
Yeah, it's me again, Don Carter. And I was listening and thinking again, and going back to the kneeling and the patriotism and all of that, right? I served for 24 years myself in the Army. But I think the concept is not just about the, as a matter of fact, it was never a disrespecting of the flag. It was standing up for rights, right? We all are equal, and perfect as God has made us. And anytime they want to have an agenda, they change the platform. So now the platform is not about us being treated equal or anything like that. It's about disrespecting the flag. So take your focus off of this and look at that. And it goes back to the parables or the contrast of this and that. But the real deal is still the original deal. And that's being treated with dignity and respect and equality, so forth and so on. And there's always been a relationship between the African-American male and the constable of peace, or the cops. Because after slavery, they came up with something called peonage. So again, it's the same thing as slavery, but they changed the name. And why would they call it peonage? With the little word peon in it, to take your focus off of this so you can look at that. Or take your focus off of that so you can look at this. And you and I can walk out of the woods, heading down the tracks to go downtown, and the constable and Mr. Billy Bob will come out the woods and say, "Hey, boy, where y'all going? You owe Billy Bob $35, and then we would have to work on the railroads, we would have to work in the coal mines, we would have to cut wood or lumber yards or whatever to work it all for 3 months, 6 months, whatever." A lot of young African-American men never did come back home to their families, but they, from slavery, they changed it to peonage. So again, his story that we relate to as his story is relevant yet again. So us old folks sitting around the campfire need to grab some young people and pass this on, because the way it used to be is we were a spoken language or spoken history, and we would talk. And that's when the elders sit around the campfire and pass this on. So our young folks, so they don't forget that culture, we need to pass some of this stuff on and ignite them, their willingness to learn. I'm through.
Okay. Well, I just want to invite one of my favorite guests, and I'm serious when I say this. Now, some people, they have a controversial attitude because our guest is very outspoken about his opinions. But see, that's why we have a show, so everybody can be outspoken about his opinions. We have to learn to agree to disagree, because that's the only way we're going to begin to really unite with each other, because we're not always going to like the same things. We're not going to like the same food, even though most of us like fried chicken. I have to say I do. But the fact is that we all don't necessarily like squash. And I know a lot of people, they don't even like what they call sweet peas. But that doesn't mean that we can't sit down to dinner together on Thanksgiving or Christmas or family reunion and enjoy being together. So just because we might have different opinions, let us respect each other's opinion. I'm saying that for a reason, because I'm getting ready to, I don't usually do this anymore, but I'm getting ready to invite one of my special guests on, Mr. Pianchi. Please come on. I want to hear your opinion.
Well, I was just listening. But you know, you made some point there. It's funny how blacks say they're important Native American and they don't like squash. Then they say they're African and they don't like stockfish and agusu. So, in other words, they are Americans, United States citizens. This is the greatest country on earth at this time. You can't think of a better place to be. When you go in your room, you hit a switch, something happens. Either the lights go off or the lights come on. When your furnace come on, hot air comes out of it because you have gas. So, no, this is the greatest. And, you know, we keep talking about this thing with these football players. Now the network don't telecast the national anthem. So nobody that's sitting at home on TV, watching TV, can see what's going on. Now what you gonna do? There's really nothing to do. Football players kneeling, standing on their head or turning somersault is not going to stop police brutality. What stops police brutality is you, the occupants of those municipalities where your employees work. They're your employees. Why you want Trump or football players to handle your employees? And it would seem like they would know that. I've heard reasons that cover the gamut on why they're doing what they're doing. But I just wanted to put that out there and let people digest
it. Okay, well, thank you. We appreciate it. We're going to have just a couple of minutes of a brief interlude in case some of y'all have to go get a drink of water, some refreshment, or just take a minute for yourself and come back. So we're going to play some nice relaxing music just to kind of give you a chance to think about what you might want to say. And those who have to take a quick break, you know, give you a chance to do that without missing anything. So stay with us. Y'all who joined us, please don't go anywhere. We're going to just play something light for just a couple of minutes.
What? No. What do you mean, something? Thank you.
And now a brief word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington.
Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. So order your copy today, and you will be contacted so that an address can be provided so the book can be mailed out to you immediately. So we're going to go ahead and resume our talk. So I'm going to turn everybody's mic on. I know people might be moving around and having conversations in their environments where they were listening from. So we're going to let everybody come back on now. We've had a little break, and I hope you enjoyed the music. But we certainly want to continue this conversation. So everybody's mic is turned on. So first come, first serve. But to kind of kick it off, I'm going to ask Brother Dr. Ali Mustafa. He's my co-host. If you'd like to make any comments based on the conversation before the break.
Yes, sir. That wise, intelligent gentleman who spoke before the break made a point so succinctly. And I want to compliment the fact that there's no greater place in America in terms of the conveniences that we have. Now, the conveniences come with a price, and the price comes with an obligation. And this obligation is not just one-sided. It is really an obligation in terms of being fair with those who have produced whatever their production of the different resources and whatever, so that we don't just become an exploitive nation. Now, that's where I'm saying that even if the reality is close to being exploitive, we don't have to have that be the fact that that's how we perceive and treat everybody else, as they're working for our progress and not the world's progress. That's all I just want to say right now.
Okay, fine. Somebody has some background noise. So if you know there's background noise in your environment, just please mute your mic. And then when you get ready to speak, you go ahead and turn your mic back on. That way the background noise will stay limited to wherever you are instead of being broadcast. Okay, so we've got some time left to continue to talk, and we'd love to hear your opinion. So anyone that wants to voice an opinion, make a statement, voice a concern, or even an objection to whatever you feel you want to object to, we just don't want anybody to be personally attacking anybody that's on the program.
I'm not going to attack anybody. I just wanted to say that I admire Kaepernick for standing up for putting himself out there to be a punching bag to everybody to do whatever they want to do. He accomplished what he set out to do. He brought attention to get people started to at least start discussing the context of trying to start dissipating this dark cloud that we have. I mean, we're in the 21st century, and
black people are still fighting for equality, safety. It's just unbelievable. I don't think the average Caucasian person walks out their door, gets in their car, driving while thinking that they're going to get pulled over by the police and possibly killed on their way to work in the morning, or going to church tomorrow, or whatever. And I mean, it's just a sad. We're just in a really sad place. This is the 2017. We're in the 21st century. And black people still have to worry about white supremacists killing them, not wanting them to have equal rights with all that we sacrificed as a people. It's just unbelievable that we're at this point right now in 2017. Why are we even having a conversation about the police killing people? It's unbelievable what's going on. He had a passion. He stood up for it. He defied the acceptance of the so-called standards. Because, I mean, whose standards are these anyways that it's okay to go out and kill people and that a murdered black person is not as you standing up and putting your hand on your heart during the national anthem? What's more important? I mean, what would they be doing if it was us doing it to them? I wonder, what would they be doing if it was us doing it to them? That's all I have to say.
Okay. Let me just go ahead. And I had closed off some mics because I heard some background noise, but I'm opening up everyone now. And so you have the floor, whoever would like to speak, go right ahead. Please, we want to hear you. Okay. Well, I'll just spend a minute then while you are thinking about what you want to say. Earlier, one of our guests, was speaking about Booker T. Washington, who's my great-grandfather, by the way, but that's not really relevant, particularly to what I'm going to say. I just thought I'd mention that because I take great pride in being a messenger for his message of reformation and unification and upliftment of humanity, but particularly of upliftment of the former slaves from Africa. So he says, and this is in my book, so I'm actually putting in a plug for my book. But before I do that, I'm going to just mention something. In the beginning of my book, there's a picture of a pilot in the flight suit, a military pilot, U.S. Army Air Forces pilot, is what the Air Force pilots were called in World War II, and he has on his flight suit, and on his right shoulder, he has a patch, a United States flag patch on his shoulder, and he's standing on a active airfield, taking a break, getting ready probably to go on a combat mission. He has his goggles on his flight helmet up over his eyes, and he's looking at someone intently. And the title above the picture is this: "You will respect this United States of America uniform, and yes, you will call me sir." And this is what my father, who was one of those pilots, had to deal with. We actually, or they did, actually had to almost twist arms, not literally speaking, but figuratively speaking, of white junior officers and white enlisted people just to get them to respect the uniform of the officers that were African American and call them sir, because they did not see these African Americans as being men, you know, the code of the United States military upon a person being commissioned to serve as an officer in the military. He's given the title of gentleman, and that carries a lot of weight in the society. And so these people weren't even considered to be gentlemen. They weren't considered to be men. And so the white people did not want to salute them. In fact, the white officers did not want to serve under any black officers. And as a result, one of the first West Point graduates that was black, Colonel Charles Young, was actually medically retired, even though he was very physically fit, because the Army didn't want to place him over white officers, because they just said they would not serve, regardless of his rank, under a black officer. And so these are some of the things that we have had to confront. But I just mentioned that while you were thinking about what you wanted to say, because we've been fighting this battle for a very, very long time. In fact, I can say that I will never forget when I was in the U.S. Army Reserves back during the Vietnam War in 1965, at the beginning, really, of the hot period of the Vietnam War. I had just come back from serving on the front line in Korea, which still was an active battlefield. Many people didn't know that, but people were getting killed. Americans were being killed up there on the DMZ, on the front line. And as a matter of fact, when I first got over there in the summer of 1962, one of the first things that I saw was some 8x10 pictures of two black men that had been serving on a guard post and had been blown apart, blown up by an attack by North Koreans. So that war was still going on, even though there was supposed to be a truce or an armistice, but it was still going on. When I was over there, I used to nightly listen to the loudspeakers across the battlefield line from the North Koreans threatening to kill us. But when I was in the reserves after I left active duty, and I was trained to be a medic, if we were deployed, I would have been working in a medical hospital in the field. When we had to go down to our place where we did our summer training, 2 weeks of active duty training, one of my fellow sergeants who was worked at the Veterans Hospital helping black veterans, because at that time the hospitals were segregated, to recover from their wounds and their service, was stopped by the Alabama Highway Patrol and beat to a pulp. And the only reason why that he was beat to a pulp was because they wanted to search him, and he had nothing that needed to be searched, but they wanted to search him. And he reached in his pocket and they saw a half dollar that had President John F. Kennedy's picture embossed on it. And because he had that picture on that dollar, they said, "Oh, you're a Kennedy nigger, huh?" And they beat him down to a pulp. Now, this was the same man who had fought probably in Korea, but certainly was in the reserves ready to go to Vietnam if called upon. And that's how they treated him. And I could go on and on with stories from my personal life. But the point is that what we want to talk about is whether that it's unpatriotic for us, anyone, but I'm talking about African Americans, to protest against racial injustice by kneeling when the national anthem is playing. So that's our topic. And so we are welcoming anyone who wants to talk.
I want to say something. It's not, I don't think it's about being disrespectful to the country or to the flag or the anthem. It's all about bringing attention to the social injustices that black people have been putting up with since the inception of this country. It's all about the police brutality, the police going out there murdering black people and getting paid, putting on paid leave. They get paid to kill black people until they decide to go to court, and they still, nothing's done about it, ever. Never, ever. what's his name?
Copernic.
He stood up for what he believed, and he got blacklisted. He got blackballed. He can't even make any money for kneeling. He can be a Caucasian European American police officer, go out there, murder somebody today, an unarmed teenager, black, grown male, child, whatever, 12-year-old. And then you put on paid leave. You get paid for killing black people in the 21st century in America. There's something wrong with that. So what would they have us do? What would they have us do to bring attention to the fact that nothing is being done about this? Nothing is being done about this. I can't even imagine what our children are thinking. My father can't protect me. My mother can't protect me. My husband can't protect me. The police is not going to protect me. He's going to kill me. There's something wrong with you. You're supposed to be a peacekeeper. That's a Ku Klux Klan. That's a modern day Klan. That's what that is. Okay, that's it. I'll have anything else to say about it.
Well, that's the people themselves that stop their employees from behaving that way. That's not Donald Trump's responsibility. I just threw him out there. You and your own municipality, that's your right, your power to control your employees.
Donald Trump's butt on his head.
Well, how would you go about?
He's getting ready to sign an executive order, and he's getting ready to walk out of the room. How many times without even signing, people had to remind him that he didn't sign.
How would you? Let's get back to the police.
There's nothing wrong with him.
Okay,
let's get back to the
police.
One person at a time, please. One at a time.
How would you go about solving that problem?
How would you go about solving it, sir?
I don't experience that problem. So how would you go about solving that problem?
Which problem are you talking about? Donald Trump? Impeach him.
No.
Impeach him right now.
No, I said the police. You came on early. How would you
the
solve
police?
That problem?
How are we going to solve the problem with the police? We need to have some kind of psychiatric.
No, how would you solve that problem? Not the we. How would you solve that problem?
Because
all the we don't experience that problem.
I am because we are, sir. I am because we are.
Okay, well, let me do this. Let me dampen, Ms. Bianchi and Ben, let me dampen that for a second, because there's some people that I'm sure y'all have done a lot of talking, and I really, really admire you for being outspoken. But there's some people that I know would like to join the conversation before we close out. And I want them to at least have a chance to say something. So those who haven't said anything, it's your turn, so please feel free if you have a comment that you'd like to make. I know some of you just dialed in to listen, and that's fine, but I'm sure some of you by now might have some thoughts on the topics that we've talked about. So let them have a chance, Ms. Bianchi and Bianca, just for a minute, and then y'all can continue. We're not going to cut you off. We just want you to hold up for just a minute. Okay, so who else would like to talk? Please go ahead. No, don't be shy. If you have something you like to say, you can say it. This is a free country. Remember, we still are a free country. We still have freedom of speech. So don't feel like somebody's going to come knocking on your door in the middle of the night and take you and hide you in some dungeon somewhere because you voiced your opinion about our First Amendment rights, because we haven't gotten there yet. And I hope we never get to that point. I mean, it's happened in other countries, but we're still free here. So let's take advantage of the opportunity to be free to say what we want to say. So please go ahead if you want to say something. Okay. We're going to let Ms. Bianchi and Bianca go ahead and have their conversation for just a couple of minutes. And then after that, we're probably going to go ahead. And I just want to read you something from my book that Booker T. Washington said in closing. And we'll go ahead and probably wrap up the conversation for tonight, if nobody else wants to join in. So we'll go ahead, Mr. Bianchi, I'm old school. you know, real old school person. I always like to say, ladies first. So, Blaine, you go ahead, and then we'll let Ms. Bianca respond to you. We'll go about 2 minutes on that, and then we'll probably close out if nobody else wants to speak. So he asked you, Blaine, how would you personally solve this problem that you were addressing concerning the police brutality issue? Blaine, are you still there? She may have stepped away for a minute.
I'm here. I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Would you like to respond?
I don't really know how. I think we have to have some kind of I'm not saying that everybody on the police force is a KKK person, but something has to be done about causing police officers to be conscious of the rights of other human beings. And just because they carry a gun doesn't give them you don't have to kill people because you have a gun. You can wound people. I think there needs to be a psychiatric evaluation test done on everybody that's on the police force so that you can weed out these people. I don't care if they're black, white, Puerto Rican, Chinese, whatever they are. If they have any kind of racist tendency, they need to be taken off the police force. So I think I would have to come up with some kind of psychiatric evaluation for all of them, for all of the policemen, all of them.
Okay, that's a good strong suggestion. Ms. Bianca, would you like to respond to that?
Well, as I said before, citizens of a community have a right to set the standards and policy by which their employees work by. They have the right to review training material, whether they're curriculum material or videos. They have a right to examine this material and make sure it's not a material that would create a us against them situation with your employees. They have a right to look at the target silhouettes, because we have had cases where departments have used black images for their target practice. So that's the citizens of the community's responsibility. They set the policies by which your employees, called police officers, operate. If it's something that they're allowed to do or they have a tendency of doing, then you set the policy, no, we're not going to have this. Why is that? Because you pay their wages and their salary. Simple as that. When one agreed the civil rights of a citizen, you should have a mechanism, it should be a national mechanism, a national registry, so that individual is tagged like a felon. Wherever they go to seek work, then that would come up. That municipality will know whether or not they want to take a chance with this person. Because ultimately, if there is a settlement because of something that they've done, aggrieving somebody's rights, that municipality is going to have to pay that settlement one way or the other. So people in these communities have to be more responsible with what it is that they're supposed to do and have a thorough community. You can't put that onus on football players. That's your responsibility. Federal governments have no input in how you run your local police department unless you are receiving funds for them. Then they will try. That's your responsibility.
I'd like to say something if I could, and when you finish, I'm going to make a comment. I'm a former cop. I'm a former, this is Halim Mustafa. I'm a former cop, California, retired after 7 years of 10 years of service. And I saw a city start up as its own police agency, and the city leadership, unfortunately, we had a bunch of thugs leadership who were council members who were gambling, who were doing all the things that the police would be enforcing to get the citizens to come into a compliance of a certain standard of quality. And so then police officers knew that the guys as city leaders who were crooks, because reputation doesn't take long to get sold. And so as a result, police officers do have a tendency to kind of like manipulate people. That's a fact. And in the manipulation, knowing that this person who is a city council member or a school board member or a church minister member, because I'm telling you across the board, I've seen church ministers, city council members, school district board trustees, all in this quick behavior, right? So when the standard of morality is missing at that level, but the safeguard is that the leadership from the top, and I believe in all my heart that the president has to set the template. The president has to set the template because the police officers themselves, we are not. Well, I'm retired after 10 years, but they are not telling on their fellow police officers who are the ones who are doing this stupid stuff. They don't do it because they're afraid of code blue, which is a term that isolates them from getting help from other police officers in emergencies. So the tendency to just shut up and just let it happen is something that just allows the waves of this behavior to continue. So it's more than just having the local leadership making those decisions in terms of what they have as authority. It's more the idea of the character on all levels. That's my last comment.
Okay. Actually, I muted out a few mics because there was some background noise, but I'm opening up everybody. And while I'm waiting to see if we have some new participants, I want to share just a few words from my book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. Pardon me. In 1968, a writer by the name of Chuck Stone said that I believe in giving the white man inordinate hell when he assigns an inferior place in society solely because of my skin color. I believe in picketing, boycotting, buying black, switching political parties, and employing every democratic measure to fight for total equality. But I find it difficult to climb out on that flagpole of persecution, which I also, this was not his quote, but I added victimization, and yell racial prejudice until I have exhausted every ounce of energy to establish, build, and or organize myself into an economic and political power. And this was during the height of what we call back in those days the Black Power Movement or the Black Revolution, and the repercussions to us who were involved in that upheaval in the status of black people was very harsh. Many of the young students and others were killed, not necessarily by police, but by KKK members that weren't wearing uniforms. Many people were beaten and thrown in prison just because they were protesting. So this person that made this statement was very, very involved and very much aware of a time in our history that was really even worse than what we're looking at today. And I can say that because I was there. And one of my very best friends who I grew up with was killed by the KKK. So this is not something I saw on a YouTube video or PBS special. This is something that I live with. Okay, so again, we're going to close in a few minutes, but we definitely want to give anyone that wants to speak an opportunity before we close to go ahead and share your thoughts with us. And remember, the main topic now tonight, it was about the freedom of the people to speak by doing this kneeling. They're speaking through getting on their knees to let people know that things need to change in terms of racial oppression. That's what the whole thing was done for. And we're talking about that main issue. So does anybody want to comment on that topic before we close out?
Well, you know, another thing, you're talking about players. African-American players in the NFL or the NBA, players on college teams have leverage where they can change the economic reality of the behind the scene things that go on that makes it possible for those activities to happen on the field and also the court. They can request, make demands, or mention that the lack of African Americans in businesses of concessions, businesses of sports medicine, marketing, in businesses of coaching, in the business of audiovisual, television, networks, officiating, they can make a big change, start the movement to making a change where you have more African Americans participating in the total economics that's derived from those sports. That there would be, I think, a greater impact than trying to do what they're doing. But people are allowed to do whatever they want to. You don't have freedom of speech in the private workplace, which the NFL is that. You have freedom of speech in the streets. Your freedom of speech is rich, and I'm saying it's restricted. Your freedom of speech is restricted in many places. The First Amendment was designed for the Congress. It wasn't designed for private business nor private corporation. And one of the reasons they're getting away with that because NFL never had any rules in the last contracts that it was put forth. Those players sign individual contracts. They're not a collective bargaining unit like GM or like the utility workers that work for your utility company or like you would see in any other factory. They sign individual contracts permitted by the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890 and two other acts that occurred in 1914. One was the Clayton Act and the other had to do with commerce. And those were designed to prevent monopolies and cartels and so on and so on and so on. But it is what it is, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, we've come to what I consider to be a good closing point, but I never like to deny anyone who's just been waiting for the right time to express himself or herself. So we're going to do this one more time and let everybody know that you're invited and encouraged to say what's on your mind. So take advantage of this opportunity if you would like to. So would anyone else like to speak now? Bayana, you've spoken, so if you want to speak last, we'll give you that opportunity. But before you do, let's see if anybody else wants to speak, because I do want you to have the last chance to speak. But does anybody else want to say anything? Okay. All right, then. Go ahead, Dr. Hale. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I want to say that I'm very much I'm a praying man. I believe in God strongly, and I believe that God has a plan in everything, and a hand in everything, and that this matter is going to certainly be it's going to come to a solution. It's not going to be a solution that we could think of right now, right? It's going to be a solution that God has that's going to bring about the manifestation of His truth in terms of the way that you are obligated to live on His planet. His universe, right? It's not ours, right? So we're just temporary roamers or travelers on this experience. So that's where I'm at. I know that God has a plan, and we just got to have faith in that plan, and we got to get up every day with the idea of contributing to a plan that's going to be tied to the what is the humanitarian thing to do. That's my last comment.
Okay, that's wonderful. We thank you for your co-hosting the show. I want to remind everyone that's been listening that Dr. Hale Mustafa, the doctor of self-esteem, the Dream Builder, has a program on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. If you've got background noise, please mute your mic. We're about to close, so I do want to make this plug for his show. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Central Time and 4 o'clock Pacific Time. And the same number you called in for this show, you can call in and you can hear him. He's a very great speaker. He's a very accomplished individual. He already told you about part of his history, being a 10-year veteran of the police department in one of the localities in California, but he's done many other things. And right now, he's building an organization to uplift and to provide a better future for young people, not just African Americans, but young people all over in America. So listen to him, and you'll be guided, and you'll be encouraged, and you should encourage your young people to listen to him as well. So now I'm going to turn over to you. Go ahead, sir.
Real, you know, it would be nice if you would have a show. We talk about one side of history as it involves quote-unquote black people. Well, it's, you know, in the Revolutionary War, you had blacks, and I'm just using the word for a better recognition of the term. You had blacks that fought for the Patriots, and you had blacks that fought for the Loyalists, Loyalists being Britain. You had blacks that fought against the American rebels and the French at Savannah, and those troops had blacks in their ranks also. Remember, the Haitians fought with George Washington at Savannah. And the Haitians, who they was fighting against, George Washington, who they was fighting against, that army had black soldiers in it also. So you had blacks fighting against blacks on both sides. But nothing is never heard about that. Martin Delaney was a major in the Union forces during the Civil War. He was one of three first blacks that was admitted to Harvard. And you know, he was the grandfather of what had became a popular term, black nationalism. So we only tell, and you know, another thing, coming up into World War II, and also back during the Revolutionary War, Dunmore, those who fought with the British, was the Ethiopian regiment. Then in World War II, you had General Patton, who was fighting against the Germans. He activated the 761st Tank Battalion, who was stateside just doing plain old drills. He said, bring those soldiers over here so they can assist in the battle. They fought in Patton's 26th Infantry, the 761st. And the 761st was some of the first soldiers to go in to some of those camps, those prison camps. And they brought freedom to those that was captured, especially the Jewish captures. And I can't think of the word that I'm trying to use. Maybe you can help me, but it escapes me right now. So we only tell one side of the story. We don't tell both sides of the story. We don't tell the story how blacks had, from 1600 on through 1865, you had free blacks and you had blacks that were slaves. While you had blacks that was out in the cotton field bent over, you had blacks that was driving up and down the roads tending business. And some of them hired, some of them had slaves, some was paid, and some they worked for not, and worked and didn't pay them. If we leave out half of the story, how would your children ever be able to draw a conclusion and see a true perspective of what was going on? A lot of the things they can pattern and help them to become successful today.
Well, you certainly made a very good point. We'll look into that, what we have been doing, just so that the rest of the audience will know. When we started the show, what we began to do is to look at the news during the week and see what kinds of issues were on the consciousness of the general public that might be listening. Of course, this is a global broadcast because of it being on the internet, as well as people being able to call in via telephone. It reaches all over the world. And but we mainly looked at what was going on in the United States. And primarily, since our major emphasis was on things that affected the African-American family, we talk, you know, generally about things that are going on that are happening with us. We talk about the situation with the HBCUs and the financial problems there. having. We've talked about the militarization of the police. We've talked about a lot of different controversial issues. But we will definitely look at that. I'm a history professor, so I believe in looking at both sides of any type of historical question. And we definitely will take your advice and we'll expand, you know, our presentation and material. So thank you very much. We appreciate that sincerely. And now we're going to close here in a minute. So we'd like to invite Bain, if you want to make some closing comments, fine. But before you do, one more time, if anybody else would like to make a comment before we wrap up, please go right ahead. Okay, well, Biden, would you like to make a closing comment?
Yes, I want to say something. Brother, the brother that just finished speaking, I'm familiar with all that history that you just spoke about. And the history of black people in America has been hidden and still is hidden. We don't even know. We're not even given the privilege or opportunity to know our history. Some of that you just talked about. You're privileged to know that. I'm privileged to know that. Imam Musa is privileged to know that. Everybody's not privileged to that. And they don't want everybody to know that. But all I'm going to say is this, is that America needs a moral conscience. Number one, that's the biggest problem in this country. We don't have a moral conscience. There's no, the moral fiber has been torn away. And if we all would think this way, I will do today what others won't, so I can do tomorrow what others can't. And that's all I have to say.
Okay. I want to end now. I know there's more that can be said, and we'll be back, God willing, next Saturday. And if you want to bring up some of these same issues, regardless of the topic that we choose, you're free to do that. This is a family discussion. We don't always have to stay on point, although I would like to exhaust the issue if we can, or at least work it out so that we get some things on the table. But I'm going to wrap up now, and I want to do that. But I don't want to short anybody. I really am not the kind of person that says I'm going to cut you off when you got words on the tip of your tongue. So in all fairness to anybody, if you got some last words on the tip of your tongue, please take advantage of this last maybe minute or 2 minutes to say what's on your mind. Okay. I want to just leave you with this thought. This is by a poetess named Margaret Walker. African-American poetess named Margaret Walker. I'm an admirer of Margaret Walker. She is a very, very prolific writer. She wrote a book by the name of Jubilee, which is a very powerful story about a family, her family, I believe, that was going all the way up from slavery times into segregation and freedom. But she said this, you know, poem called Lineage. My grandmothers were strong. My grandmothers were strong. They followed plows and they bent to toil, and they moved through fields sowing seed, and they touched earth and grain grew. They were full of sturdiness and full of singing. Oh, my grandmothers were so strong. My grandmothers are full of memories, smelling of soap and onions and wet clay, with veins rolling roughly over quick hands. They have many clean words to say. My grandmothers were strong. Why am I not as they? And I think part of it is because this mother-to-child teaching that we used to get when families, you know, at least the children were with their mothers, is not as strong in our lives as it used to be a long time ago. And that kind of message that is expressed by Langston Hughes in his poem, Mother to Son, probably one of the most strong poems about encouragement for our young people that has ever been given to us as an African-American family, where he says, as a mother speaking to her son, well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time I've been climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So, boy, don't you turn back. Don't you sit down on the steps because you find it's kind of hard. Don't you fall now because I'm still going, honey. I'm still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair. So we're going to leave with that, and we're going to play the song we began the show with, and that is not the words but the music to lift every voice and sing.